Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Now, anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. As you know, the blogs go up over there on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so hopefully you got over there yesterday to check out the blog that went up. But if not, don't worry. It's still up there. Swing on by. You can not only get that blog, but any of the other ones that have been posted over there so you can get yourself caught up. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you'll see that link. It'll take you over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, well, hey, I greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is, oh, yeah, I'm sure you guessed this by now, it's at Sports Time Radio. You can also find me on Twitter as well. I am at BurkTime. That's BurkTime, if you're looking for me there. And, all right, I want to start out with something here, and I'm wondering how many people watched it. I haven't seen the rating for it yet, but Shaq wrestled, Shaquille O'Neal, yes, he wrestled last night for All Elite Wrestling. It was Shaquille O'Neal and Jade Cargill against Cody Rhodes and Red Velvet. Shaq's team did win, but he was not involved in the actual pinfall. The ladies took care of that. It was what they called a mixed tag, so the men were only allowed to wrestle the men, and then the women, of course, obviously went against the women. In the end, though, Shaq actually fell off the ring apron through two tables with Cody Rhodes. And the interesting thing about this is he did this near on as perfect as you could teach somebody to do this. Now, I was a professional wrestler on the what they call the independent scene for about 25 years. And I also trained many wrestlers, including Dan the Man, who's generally my co-host here on the podcast. I don't know where he is yet. Hopefully he'll roll in here soon. But, you know, if you saw it or if you're going to see it, what you want to pay attention to is look at Shaq's head and look how he keeps it completely forward to where his chin literally touches his chest. In the wrestling business, that's obviously called tucking your head. And what it does is it prevents you from snapping it and whiplashing it on the floor and either A, knocking yourself out, or B, giving yourself a concussion, obviously neither of which you want. The second thing that he did really well is he took his time. You know, he didn't launch himself off the ring apron. He didn't push away from it. He took what you would describe as a timber bump, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a tree falling over. And that's what he looked like. He held on to Cody Rhodes, cross-bodied him, and they both went off the apron through these two tables. Shaq did a nice job of holding on to Cody tight to not only protect himself, but Cody Rhodes in this situation. So, I can't give him enough credit for taking that kind of bump at his age, because I believe, he's 50-plus now, right? I mean, that's just insane. And just at his size, you know, there's always inherent dangers with that. But the tables broke nice and clean. They were both safe, and Shaq sold it like killed. They actually stretchered him out and loaded him into an ambulance. And humorously, they tried to get an interview with him in the back of the ambulance. And when they opened it, he magically had disappeared. So I don't know where they're going with that angle or if we'll see Shaq again in AEW. But he did just a fantastic job not only of taking that bump, but in the match as well. And you got to give Cody Rhodes a lot of credit because they really portrayed Shaq like a monster. You know, I believe just about everything Cody did to him was incredibly ineffective, with the exception of I think he poked him in the eye, which, of course, will work on anybody. So, you know, it was just – I was really shocked with how well Shaquille O'Neal did last night. And humorously, I am interested to see how this plays out on TNT – you know, because obviously they talked about it, you know, TNT and AEW are on the same station. So it would be kind of interesting, you know, and I know for the last few weeks, you know, Shaq had been on there calling Cody Rhodes Cody Cupcake. And, you know, Charles Barkley have been giving him a hard time about wrestling. So I'm interested to see how they portray it or how things kind of go tonight. But if you haven't seen the match, I suggest you go and find it. You know, it is possible that it's on, you know, online somewhere that you could probably, you could probably find it, you know, or at least catch the table bump that Shaq and Cody took. But in the end, Shaq and his partner, Jade Cargill, did win the match when Jade Cargill pinned Red Velvet. So, like I said, hopefully you checked it out. If not, you know, you definitely should go look for it. But I think that, you know, I think that's good for the wrestling talk today. And I want to jump in here and we'll run over the NBA schedule for tonight. You know, as they're headed into All-Star Weekend, will be the last games played through how much time did they give them off? Let me check here. Till Wednesday of next week. So tonight we have the Toronto Raptors at the Boston Celtics. The L.A. Clippers are at the Washington Wizards. The Detroit Pistons are at the New York Knicks. The Denver Nuggets are at the Indiana Pacers. The Milwaukee Bucks are at the Memphis Grizzlies. The TNT game, which starts at 7:30 my time, has the Miami Heat against the New Orleans Pelicans. You also get the Oklahoma City Thunder against the San Antonio Spurs. The Sacramento Kings take on the Portland Trail Blazers, and the Golden State Warriors go against the Phoenix Suns. You know, and then the NBA will take a little bit shorter of an All-Star break than they have in the past. You know, LeBron likes to have a full week, but they're not going to quite get a full week this year because of the scheduling and the games they have to get in. But over in the NHL, we have the Detroit Red Wings at the Carolina Hurricanes. One of the games you can get on the Mickey Mouse Network Plus app there is the Philadelphia Flyers at the Pittsburgh Penguins. You have the Winnipeg Jets at the Montreal Canadiens, the New York Rangers at the New Jersey Devils, the Buffalo Sabres at the New York Islanders. Another game available on the good old Mickey Mouse app is the Tampa Bay Lightning at the Chicago Blackhawks. We have the Florida Panthers at the Nashville Predators. The Columbus Blue Jackets are at the Dallas Stars. The Ottawa Senators are at the Calgary Flames. And your night in the NHL wraps up with the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Vancouver Canucks. So there's your scheduling for tonight. If you're interested in watching a game, you know, hopefully you get one locally. You know, I, of course, will get the Blackhawks Lightning game. So I will get to check that out and see if the Blackhawks can do anything against one of the better teams in the NHL. So that'll be quite interesting. But I did want to move on. We had some interesting baseball news here as Jackie Bradley Jr. has finally found a team. He got a 2-year, $24 million deal from the Milwaukee Brewers. Now, the way the contract is set up is he'll get $13 million this season and then obviously $11 next season. But the contract contains an opt-out clause after this year. So Bradley can, if he decides, he can go back into free agency again after just 1 year in Milwaukee. Now, last year he played 55 games with the Red Sox, and he actually posted his highest career batting average of .283. He's only a career .239 lifetime hitter. He hit 7 homers, drove in 22 RBIs, and had 11 doubles. What's interesting to me with this is, you know, the National League did not choose to use the DH this season. So it really kind of compacts the Brewers' outfield. And I'm kind of curious on how they're going to go through this and they're going to work this out. You know, I mean, obviously Christian Yelich is going to play every day. There's no doubt about that. You know, I understand that Lorenzo Cain is almost 35, but, you know, you got to think he's going to play. And then they had Avisail Garcia, who had a fantastic year for them last year. It's almost looking like he's the odd man out, and Bradley will take his spot in the lineup, be it either in right field where Garcia plays or maybe in center and Lorenzo Cain moves over to right. You know, as you know, Bradley is one of the best defensive outfielders in baseball. And, yeah, I'm just a little surprised. I don't know how much this improves the Brewers. You know, as good as Bradley is defensively, you know, or I should say as much better of a defender as Bradley is compared to Garcia, Garcia is probably the same as a hitter when you compare him to Bradley. So I don't know how much it's going to improve the team. You know, I mean, obviously you improve offensively, but then you improve defensively, but then you lose a little bit of that on offense. Unless Bradley can find a way to repeat what he did last year, but there's nowhere in his career does it say that he's going to be able to do this again. So I don't know how this is going to work out for Milwaukee. I mean, obviously they get a really nice player on a really good deal, and my guess is Bradley will probably opt out after this year, depending on what kind of season he has. You know, because he could probably, you know, if he just gets the qualifying offer, he'll make a lot more money than this. So I just kind of wonder how it will work out. So I don't know, you know, what happens here with the Brewers, but we'll have to wait and see. And, you know, the big question is, I don't think it puts them on the level with the Cardinals, but it may put them ahead of the Cubs, you know, the Cubs and the Reds, I should add. So I guess they're the second best team in the NL Central for whatever that's worth. I don't know what a lot of that means there, you know, when you really kind of think about it. You know, I mean, I guess it's like being the runner up for Miss America. If something happens to the first team, you get to take over. But I don't think this, you know, move makes Milwaukee a playoff team or, you know, anything like that. I mean, they still have a relatively big hole in their lineup at third base. I know they brought Travis Shaw in as a non-roster invitee, but I don't think he's the answer there. You know, I mean, the rest of their lineup is very good. You do have to wonder how Keston Hiura would do over at first base. You know, but, you know, having Colton Wong and adding Bradley Jr. will obviously make their defense better. They really need Omar Narváez to bounce back with the bat. You know, he kind of struggled last year, but again, you can't hold that against him. And the move of being able to move Garcia to the bench obviously strengthens their bench. It also probably buries the idea of them bringing Ryan Braun back because there was a little rumor there. But, you know, we're talking about a team that has a relatively weak starting rotation. I mean, here's what they're predicting. It'll be Brandon Woodruff at the top, followed by Corbin Burns, Josh Lindblom, Adrian Hauser, and Brett Anderson. You know, that's not a shutdown, lockdown kind of starting rotation. And then my question becomes, why the hell isn't Freddy Peralta projected to be one of your starters? You know, it makes no sense to me having him be the long man out of the bullpen when he probably has the better arm out of the five of those guys. So, you know, and then, you know, obviously people are expecting Devin Williams to repeat his performance from last season. I don't know if that's possible. You know, they did end up bringing Josh Hader back as closer, even though there was a ton of talk in the offseason about him being on the trading block. You know, they added Brad Boxberger to the bullpen as a non-roster invitee. But again, they don't have a ton of, you know, lockdown type of relievers. You know, the other interesting thing is the move of Bradley also looks like it will have them end up releasing Daniel Vogelbach or designating him for assignment because he's out of options. So, you know, I don't know how that'll work out. So there are still, you know, even though they add a quality player in Jackie Bradley, there's still a lot of questions going on with this Brewers team. So I don't know, you know, I'm not going to celebrate this signing like a lot of people will, but it, you know, it's good and it should make them better. We'll have to see how it goes. So, all right, I want to give you an update on a story we did yesterday. I mentioned that Framber Valdez, who was expected to be a nice cog in the Houston Astros starting rotation, he fractured what turned out to be his left ring finger. You know, and, you know, we were trying to figure out what the options were for him yesterday as there wasn't a lot of information. What it looks like now is apparently, and this article says, the additional recommendation is surgery. Now, the weird thing about this is the recovery time for the operation Valdez would have him missing either the majority of the season or possibly the entire season. So that's a really big deal here, especially for the Astros, who, you know, are already without Justin Verlander. You know, he's not going to pitch this year, so you got to wonder who steps up and fills that spot. I mean, you know, they still have Zach Greinke. You know, I know they expect a lot out of Lance McCullers Jr., but you got to remember we're talking about a guy who's been injury prone his entire career. The rest of the rotation looks like Jose Urquidia, Christian Javier, and Luis Garcia. Again, I still think they're the best team in the AL West because I believe the A's really took a step back, and I don't think the Angels did quite enough to get them past the Astros. But losing Valdez is a big, big blow. So you've got to kind of wonder, you know, if maybe, you know, if Valdez is going to miss the whole season, is this the time for them to reach out to Jake Odorizzi and see if they can bring him here in on a, you know, maybe a 1 year with an option type of deal? You know, because that, you know, that would really kind of solidify, you know, what they've got going on there. I'm just not, you know, I mean, I don't know enough about Garcia to know if he can step in and be that guy, you know, but, you know, it's always a possibility, you know, if they feel he's ready. You know, yesterday Dan and I discussed quite a bit about Forrest Whitley, who, you know, who could also be, you know, a guy who may – you know, maybe it doesn't seem like he is, but he could be considered for this. You know, and to be fair, Garcia had a short stint with the Astros. He made one start for them last year, but he appeared in five games. He was 0-1 with a 2.92 ERA. So, you know, he had good, you know, good numbers for them there. I want to look and see what his start was and kind of how it went just to help it out a little more. Where is it? Yeah, he made a start against the Oakland A's. He lasted five innings, only gave up one hit, no runs, struck out four, walked two. So nothing, nothing wrong with that. You know, obviously, I mean, you know, in my book, I would have loved him to add a sixth inning or a seventh inning or anything. He did make one postseason appearance for them last year. He pitched two innings. He did walk two. He struck out one, and he hit a guy. But he didn't give up any runs, so he struggled a little bit. But he, you know, he didn't give up any runs, which is always the important thing. You know, possibly another name I see here is Brian Abreu. Again, you know, I don't know a lot about these guys. Abreu did not pitch last year in the majors for Houston. Let me hunt down his minor league stats here really quick, and we can see what he's got on the books here. Actually, they do have him pitching for the Astros last year. Okay, he appeared in four games. Looks like he had a 2.70 ERA and went 0-0. He all in relief. He has not pitched above Triple A though, but he also made seven appearances for the Astros back in 2019, all in relief again, and posted a 1.40 ERA. Now he has majority of his outings in the minors have been starts. So you wonder if he could give them enough innings as a starter. You know, I mean, obviously we would be talking about like Austin Pruitt or Josh James to maybe fill this rotation opening, but they're both hurt and neither of them are going to be ready anytime close till, you know, by the time opening day rolls around. There's also the possibility that the Astros could turn to Brandon Bielik. You know, he made some appearances for them last year. He actually made, let me hunt this down here as my computer jumped on me. He made six starts. He appeared in 12 games. He was 3-3, but his ERA was 6.75. So I don't know if he's the best option right there when it comes to filling the role, but you know, you got to find somebody. And obviously he has the most experience out of, you know, himself, Garcia and Abreu. So we'll see how it works or what they decide. Again, you've got to wonder if Forrest Whitley will be given an opportunity, you know, or at least get looked at as a possibility there to take that role. You know, they don't have a ton of other what you would call like name value guys who could step up. And again, that's why I wonder if it's time to touch base with Jake Odorizzi and get him into camp and see if you can get him signed up and ready to go. And, you know, he could be a nice, you know, even if you've got to skip him for his first start or two, you know, to get him ready, you know, maybe he's the answer there. So we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, again, you know, we'll have to work out. And then I want to give you another quick update on a player Dan and I talked about. We talked a little bit about utility man Danny Santana. From all reports, Santana will sign with the Boston Red Sox. Now, this is interesting because the Red Sox seem to be adding nothing but utility guys. You know, they signed Kiki Hernandez in free agency, and the plan is actually for Kiki to be the everyday second baseman. So he won't actually, you know, fall back into that utility role. But they also added Marwin Gonzalez, and they also have Christian Arroyo, who has been a struggling prospect for quite a few years since he was with the Giants. You know, now Santana can play the infield and the outfield. So he does add a lot of versatility, and so does Gonzalez. Arroyo is basically just an infielder. It's just kind of an interesting way to go about it. I mean, it looks like the Red Sox bench is going to be whoever the backup catcher ends up being, probably Kevin Pawecki, and then utility guys. So it will give Alex Cora a ton of flexibility. You know, I don't know what kind of experiment it'll be or how it will work out. You know, and Santana is coming off a 2020 where, you know, he only played 15 games and really struggled. So, you know, it's, you know, clear that, you know, the Red Sox are hoping to get the 2019 version that hit 283 with 28 homers in 130 games. But, you know, we'll have to see how it works out. You know, the deal isn't official yet, but it's being, you know, everything's being reported that this is where he will sign and he'll report to camp. So there you go. Just caught, you know, catch you up a little bit on a couple of the guys we talked about yesterday as we're getting very close to, you know, to actual spring training. You know, and then it looks like the Diamondbacks added another veteran reliever who at one point in time was looked at as a premier setup man. They're bringing in Anthony Swarzak, and they're, you know, he's being brought in to the major league camp as a non-roster invitee, so he'll get the minor league deal. You know, with the invite to spring training, as they say. You know, Swarzak back in what year was that? Let me find it here if I can. In what 2017 and, you know, 2017, he was looked at as a big time setup guy. He had a really good year in 2013, but 2017, he really bounced back with the White Sox, and then they dealt him to Milwaukee, and he proceeded to continue to pitch really well. The Mets brought him in as a free agent, and it didn't work out. He ended up then going to the Mariners and the Braves last year, and it still didn't work out. With the Mets, he posted an ERA of 6.15, and then combined last year with the Mariners and the Braves, he was 4.56. So he's really regressed, and you've got to wonder, I think, if he's going to actually find a spot in this Arizona bullpen. You know, they've added some veteran guys. You know, they brought in Joachim Soria, Tyler Clippard, Chris Davinsky, and Ryan Butcher, excuse me. So maybe there's a role for Swarzak, or maybe not, and you got to wonder if he would accept a minor league assignment if it kind of worked out that way. And, you know, obviously we're not, I don't think anybody's expecting the Diamondbacks, especially in that, you know, the NL West there to chase after a playoff spot. But, you know, this is one of those ads where, if, you know, he can go out and he can show that he can get batters out again, he becomes trade bait, you know, for a veteran, you know, for a playoff team looking for a veteran setup guy. So, you know, you just never know with deals like that. And, you know, this is how rebuilding teams do it. They add these veteran guys and hope that they kind of, you know, hit their stride again, and they move them for prospects, you know, and then everything's good and right in their world, and it all works out. Oh, but all right. Well, you know, since Dan's not here, I am going to cut out a little early. Sorry to disappoint you. But this is generally how I do it when I end up being by myself. I do 30 minutes and we're kind of at that threshold. So I'd like to obviously thank everybody for listening. If you missed out, you know the deal. Go on over to tunein.com, and you can listen to us anytime you want over there. And, you know the basics, sportstimeradio.com. Get over there and check out the blogs. The Twitter feed is at sportstimeradio. I'm also on Twitter at Burketime. That's B-U-R-K-E-T-I-M-E. I'm back tomorrow with Schomburg Stew at 5 o'clock. So we start a half hour later. So swing on by and meet us here. And again, I just thank everybody for watching, and I apologize for cutting out early, but I'm sure you can start to hear it. My voice is starting to go away. So I'll see you tomorrow at 5 o'clock, and be safe.